All right, using the latest in computer technology, we are live on the internet. I'm Dave Rubin. This is the Rubin Report. And today I have a special co-host from a place called Washington, D.C., a wretched hive of scum and villainy, but not this guy, my friend Dennis Prager from the Dennis Prager Radio Show, from PragerU, and multiple Rubin Report guests. Dennis, how are you?
Really well. Last night I had a big debate on the Middle East for a Zero Hedge.
Yes, how did that go? You debated. It was a two-on-two debate involving an old colleague of mine on the other side, and I'm sure you worked it all out. Have you solved all of the problems of the Middle East?
Oh, I think they're solvable, but the problem is people need clarity, both of history and of morality, and we live in the age of moral confusion. I know this isn't your subject. I'll just say very quickly that if you can't tell the moral difference between Hamas and Israel, then your conscience has truly been played with. It's actually scary to see all these demonstrators with this great libel against Israel of genocide, for example. I tell you, it's... the chickens are coming home to roost of 50 years of moral confusion.
Well, we're going to talk about where some of that moral confusion has come from, because you actually went to one of those places, Columbia. And if I'm not mistaken, you might have even taught at Columbia at one time. And that really is where a lot of the lunacy was starting 40 years ago, but is also happening today. But let me ask you just one other question about the debate, the idea of debates about these things in general. We don't have to get into yesterday's debate if you don't want to, but do you find that there's a purpose for them anymore? Because I'm asked to be involved in a lot of these debates, and I find at some point just endlessly debating whether Israel is better than Hamas or not is not only a waste of time, but is offering a certain credence to the other side that I don't think it deserves anymore. And I hate to say that as someone that, obviously I'm for free speech, I'm for open debate and happy to debate the plethora of political issues that we should be debating in a functional society. This doesn't really seem like one anymore to me.
So it's a very good question. And believe me, I did not want to go from LA to Washington. This should make it obvious. Two nights from now, I fly to South Africa. So I go back to LA to go to South Africa, where I'll be speaking over the Passover holiday. So this was not something I ached to do. And to be very, very open with you, Dave, I just feel that Israel needs as many good defenders as possible. And I don't know what to tell you. It's sort of like this is the moral yardstick of our time. If you can't tell who's right in this instance, as I said, your conscience has been truly manipulated. So, Dave, I just feel a moral obligation to speak on behalf of Israel and what I believe is a good versus evil. Not believe. I know it's a good versus evil issue.
Well,
go ahead.
No, I admire that and I respect that. And hopefully you changed some minds. I know that you probably didn't change the minds of the people that you were debating trying to.
I've been doing this all of my life. I never debate in order to change the person I'm talking to mine. I am only considering the audience. That's why you raised a very interesting subject. I almost never debate one-on-one, like at a dinner that I'm having with people. Mm-hmm. If there's no audience whose minds I might be able to influence, I don't want to expend the caloric energy on the person who feels Hamas is right and Israel is wrong. It's not worth it. Let's talk about the weather in LA, which is itself boring subject every day, but that's a separate.
That's why we usually have you guys over to explain to me all of the crazy things that were going to happen to me in my life when we have kids. And guess what, Dennis Prager, you were right about all of them. So congratulations. But all right, let's dive into some of the craziness of the week. We're gonna hit some of the stuff coming out of Colombia, which is connected to what we were just talking about as it relates to Israel and Hamas. We're gonna talk about some gender confusion, because of course that's not going anywhere, and then just sort of general media meltdowns as it pertains to a certain orange man. So let's dive into Colombia to start. Representative Stefanik, Elise Stefanik from New York, was doing another one of these congressional hearings trying to figure out why it is that Colombia, your alma mater, is now ground zero for the Hamas supporters on college campuses. Here she is talking to or questioning current Colombia president. Her name is Michaud Chafik.
Let me ask about Professor Catherine Frank from the Columbia Law School, who said that all Israeli students who have served in the IDF are dangerous and shouldn't be on campus. What disciplinary action has been taken against that professor?
I agree with you that those comments are completely unacceptable and discriminatory.
But I'm asking you what disciplinary action has been taken.
She has been spoken to by a very senior person in the administration, and she has said that that was not what she intended to say.
And has she publicly apologized?
I have suggested that.
You have suggested that? Has she done that?
I think she will be finding a way to clarify her position.
You see the concern here, though, with the lack of enforcement. You see the concern that speaking to these professors is not enough, and it's sending a message across the university that this is tolerated, these anti-Semitic statements from a position of authority in professors in the classroom is tolerated.
Dennis, there basically is a field now in the center of the Columbia campus that is like a Hamas-run campus organization with tents and everything. They're having these chants every day, river to the sea, all of the stuff. So without getting in maybe to the specifics of that, that's just another symptom of what's been going on here. As someone that knows Colombia inside and out, did you see this was happening decades ago? Like, does any of this surprise you, I guess? Because I think it's surprising to a lot of people. For those of us that have been tracking what's going on in academia, I suppose it's not that surprising, but you're an insider on this.
I suggest that your viewers go on the internet where they are now, Google Dennis Prager, How I Found God at Colombia. I wrote an article on it many years ago, and I did a PragerU video on it, and it's the truth. I was taught so much nonsense. I went to graduate school at Columbia, not undergrad, and I was in the School of International Affairs. I was taught then that men and women are basically the same. I was taught then that the United States and the Soviet Union was not a moral Cold War. It was simply the Cold War of superpowers. And the analogy I remember was always scorpions in a bottle, just clawing at each other. We have our hegemonic interest and they have their hegemonic interest. It was not tyranny versus freedom. It was two superpowers engaged in a battle. So one day, and this is actually true, it's the only time I had an epiphany. That not a theophany, God did not appear to me. God has never appeared to me as such, and nor do I expect it. So that's a non-issue. But I was just like sucker punched by the fools teaching me, some of them very nice and all of them very bright. But none of that has to do with wisdom. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, Dave, I give you my word, and it's provable because I think it's 25 years ago I wrote about this. And all of a sudden, a phrase from the Bible in Hebrew came to me. I had not said it since third grade in my yeshiva, Jewish religious school. And it was, wisdom begins with fear of the Lord or fear of God. Mm. And that changed my life. And I realized, oh, there's no God at Columbia. There's no wisdom at Columbia. This is the 1970s. So nothing has changed. It's only gotten worse.
So I suspect at that time you probably didn't have outright, and correct me if I'm wrong, there probably weren't professors or visiting professors in this case calling for outright revolution on the streets of the United States. That actually has been what's going on there at least for the past year, if not longer. This is really wild. So here's Representative Stefanik. She's questioning the president again because they had a visiting professor who started after October 7th named Mohamed Abdu, calling quite literally for real revolution, not just the idea of revolution, real revolution here in the United States.
Talking about the faculty members who are supporting terror, and it's not just that case. Let me bring your attention to Mohamed Abdu, who was hired after the October 7th terrorist attack against Israel. He, on October 11th, posted, "Yes, I'm with Hamas and Hezbollah and Islamic Jihad." He also decried false reports accusing Arabs and Muslims of decapitating the heads of children and being rapists. We know that there were decapitations of babies, of innocent Israeli citizens, of seniors, of women. There were rapes. And yet, Columbia hired this individual as a professor. How did that hiring process work? Were you aware of those statements before the hiring?
I share with you your repugnance at those remarks. I completely understand that. On my watch, faculty who make remarks that cross the line in terms of anti-Semitism, there will be consequences for them.
What are the consequences in this case?
I have five cases at the moment who have either been either taken out of the classroom or dismissed.
And is he one of those?
He will never work at Columbia again.
So he has been terminated?
He has been terminated. And not just terminated, but his files will show that he will never work at Columbia again.
So he's currently not employed by Columbia?
He is grading his students' papers and will never teach at Columbia again, and that will be on his permanent
How
record.
Are you?
So Dennis, I suppose the outcome here is good if we're to believe that Columbia has any value in saving or something like that. Just for the record, I don't know if you've seen it yet, but I did see the 47-minute video that the IDF is showing to select people. And yes, there were decapitations with nothing more than a kitchen knife, and you can watch people walking away with a head in their hand smiling. I mean, it's the most psychotic thing you can possibly imagine. But that level that they're talking about there, did you see that sort of thing back then, or is this new?
Well, I'm not surprised. Look, remember, I was there also right after the anti-Vietnam War riots. So the notion that America is an evil place is not new. The call for revolution. This guy is anti-Semitic, and I've written a major book on anti-Semitism. I'm a religious Jew. I have fought it all of my life. I don't even want to concentrate on, excuse me, he's anti-Semitic. He's evil. The term is sort of unpopular and has become unpopular because the left doesn't confront evil. It confronts colonizers. It confronts people who are not anti-racist. It confronts a patriarchy. Mm-hmm. It never confronts evil. It confronts Confederate statues. I wrote a column a few years ago, the left fights statues, the right fights evil. So it's much worse than, I don't care what he thinks of Jews. Anyone who does not understand that the man supports the greatest organized evil in the world today, Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Iranian regime, that person has to be dismissed as a dangerous moral idiot, not an anti-Semite. It too narrows the moral reaction to this man.
Right. Well, I completely agree with that, and I don't just run around calling people anti-Semites, and I actually agree.
That wonderful congresswoman did.
Right. So, and I understand the word has less meaning now, and I would actually say if that guy, he's obviously some level of an anti-Semite at some extent, obviously, but that's not the issue here. Having a visiting professor who is not even a citizen of the United States teaching young minds, whatever's left of their minds, at Columbia, that seems like a problem. So I suppose he's grading papers still, but he won't teach her anymore. But does it not surprise you that we haven't heard about him being deported, perhaps? Because I suppose if you're supporting a terrorist organization, it's one, you know, okay, fine, Columbia is going to get rid of you, but shouldn't you also be deported, or am I just a crazy right-wing maniac now?
Well, look, the guy didn't really say what's objectionable to the New York Times. That entire world of the Democratic Party, largely, he didn't say, for example, that it's not fair for men who say they're women to compete in women's sports. That would start deportation proceedings.
Touche, touche. All right, let me show you one other from this hearing, because Ilhan Omar, who I believe is part of the Hamas caucus, and I cannot believe that this woman is a congresswoman in America, but here we are. Here she is, and let's see if she really has her eye on the ball of what's going on at our college campuses.
I wanted to get a clarification earlier. One of my colleagues asked you, have you seen anti-Muslim protests on campus?
We have had pro-Israeli demonstrations on campus?
No.
But
just
not
a protest that was not against Muslims?
No, I have not.
Have you seen one against Arabs?
No, I have not.
Have you seen one against Palestinians?
No, I have not.
Have you seen against one against Jewish people? Have you seen a protest saying we are against Jewish people?
No, I have seen.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
Dennis, her duplicitousness really knows no ends. She knows exactly what she's doing there. And if you're calling for all the Jews to have to leave that spot between the river and the sea, maybe it's kind of about Jews, a little bit, tiny bit.
Well, notice she didn't say, did you see any anti-Zionist demonstrations on campus? Zionist is the term, and it's been true since the Holocaust. Zionist is the term that people who don't want to be called anti-Semite use for Jews. And she wisely did not ask about that. And for people who say anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism, I have asked, I wrote this 40 years ago, it's not changed one iota, and that is this. If you say, I would like Italy destroyed, but I want you to know I really love Italians, nobody would believe you.
Yeah.
Anti-Zionism means Israel has no right to exist. Oh, but I'm a big Jew fan. But if for the Jews to have a country the size of New Jersey with 22 Arab states and 52 Muslim states in the world, that's beyond the pale. But hey, don't think I'm anti-Jewish. I love Jews. Just they're the only group on earth not deserving of a country.
Let me ask you one other thing on this, and then we'll move on to another topic. But do you think there is a way that we in the West can win the PR war? That they have so taken over the institutions, it's now algorithmically fueled. We know that China's pushing nonsense through TikTok. There are so many forces against us. We also don't, because of the way they've taken over education, we don't have people who understand history properly. They look at maps and see words and they think it means something, but it doesn't mean anything. You know, all of the funniest one to me is all of these people screaming about 75 years of occupation are calling, in essence, for the British Empire to return. So I suppose we could bring the Ottoman Empire back and we can do this over the course of thousands of years. But is there a way to actually win the PR war? And I'm not talking about Israel. I'm talking about America and the West, because that's what really you can see now in the last week or so. The chants of death to America are starting on our streets. They weren't there 2 weeks ago. So the next level of this thing is already here.
Death to Israel means death to the West. And if anyone who denies that is a fool, that you have defined yourself as a fool. That's what anti-Israel is about. It's anti-West. So at least they're now, the anti-Israel crowd is now at least honest enough to say, listen, it's not enough to say death to Israel. You also have to say death to America. And that is exactly right. That's what they want. They want the death of the West. And in England, as Douglas Murray constantly notes, it is actually taking place.
Mm-hmm.
So you're asking me the only thing I never answer, and that is to predict the future. I have no idea. I can tell you this. Half of the American people are morally coherent. You know, if you have, I'm saying this not to you, you might, but the you is collective. If one has, how's that? If one has a relative who says that men can compete against women in sports if he says he's a woman, that person is hopeless. No, it's bad news. Yeah. It's not worthy of debate as a general rule. You have to make peace with the fact that you are related to a moral idiot. And that, by the way, moral idiot is not meant as a cute attack line. It is a concept. You can be brilliant in physics, brilliant in math, brilliant in medicine, and a moral idiot. And by the way, that's not uncommon to be brilliant in some field and a moral idiot. They have nothing to do with one another.
You're giving me a great segue to the next segment, because I want to talk a bit about the WNBA and some of this gender stuff as it relates to sports. But, you know, it's funny, as you said that, I'm playing basketball again, and I play in a couple weekly games now with guys that are usually, it's about 35 years old, and some of the older guys are in their early 60s. I'm 47, so I'm right in the middle. And as you were saying that, it was making me think, man, if I was playing basketball against a bunch of 55-year-old women, think how absolutely insane that would be. I mean, just absolutely insane. By the way, Dennis, how tall are you again? Because we're going to talk about basketball now.
6'4", yeah.
6'4".
You have to understand, God gave me height, but no talent.
So you could play in the WNBA.
I made my yeshiva high school basketball team solely because I was the tallest kid in the school.
And Dennis, my friend, I think if I'm not mistaken, you're 71 years old. Am I right?
75.
Look at you. You don't look a day over 62. You're 75. And if you put on a dress, you could be a starting center in the WNBA, which gets me to the next segment here. So there's been this whole craziness because Caitlin Clark, who is a spectacular women's basketball player, and there's nothing wrong with that. She has been drafted into the WNBA by the Indiana Fever. And I've got some info on her contract here because people are very upset by this. This is from NBA Central. She has a 4-year standard rookie contract. Over the course of the 4 years, it's going to be about $340,000, basically $76,000 first year, $78,000 second year, $85,000 third year, and almost $100,000 on the option of the 27 on the fourth year, which then she can decide if she wants to take or go to another team. But people are very upset by this. And here's a tweet from Ro Khanna, Democrat Ro Khanna. Here's a good one. The first pick in the NBA draft will make around $10 million in 1 year. Caitlin Clark will make $76,000. That is wrong. Pay women what they deserve. Dennis, this strikes me, before we get into some other tweets from analysts on this, this strikes me as the perfect example of people who don't understand anything as it relates to reality. Not only the difference between men and women and why, I don't know, say men happen to generally be bigger and stronger, thus can dunk and more people go, but as it relates to the pay, the fabricated pay gap, which PragerU has a fantastic video on by Christina Huff Summers, and virtually everything. If these people could just take some money from LeBron James and give it to Caitlin Clark, they would do it. It's crazy.
Well, I was thinking about this, and I don't follow the world of modeling much, to be honest, but I try to be up on more or less everything. I even know about major football players and whom they're dating. So I'm up on some stuff. Anyway, if I would say to you, how much does a supermodel make? The truth is, some of them make millions of dollars a year, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there one male supermodel who makes millions of dollars a year? I doubt it. Because generally speaking, people rather see women models than male models, generally speaking. Okay. So is it fair that male models make so much less than female models? Yes, of course it's fair. What does fair mean? Is it fair that there are guys struggling on the getting dates? And my heart goes out to these guys who are short and they're terrific guys, but they weren't blessed with height. This Life has unfairnesses in it. Now, if there were a way to have a surgery and elongate his body, I would totally support the guy. But what are you going to do? The WNBA does not bring in the revenue of the NBA.
Right.
So what are we supposed to do? Have a GoFundMe page for her?
Well, by the way, you could have a GoFundMe page for her. It would be interesting if they did, I suppose.
That's right. That's a good point.
But the basic truth, but it's so interesting because they take the gender confusion and then they combine it into something as it relates to capitalism that it really just all leads to socialism. If we could just confuse people, and it won't matter if anyone watches the WNBA. And by the way, I'm not putting down the WNBA. If you're a girl and you're a basketball player and you love it, it's great. That's fine. But they are very confused about this. So Jemele Hill, who is an ESPN analyst, big woke sort of lefty ESPN analyst, she wrote this. I'm already annoyed by this conversation because for years, WNBA players have fought for more money. And when they were outspoken, so many of y'all told them to shut up or reminded them that they had no value the NBA has had for 50 plus years of investment, media coverage, etc. After 27 years, the WNBA will not be the current NBA. So stop comparing them. Further context, this salary is for 4 months of basketball, which is 40 games. Players also receive a free apartment and car. That doesn't make the salaries acceptable, but now you know why so many women's players play overseas to boost or supplement their income. Weaponizing this information against WNBA players is another form of misogyny. These women have been dreaming of playing professionally in front of American audiences their whole lives. Instead of clowning and reminding them of what they're not, buy the merchandise, go to the games, and watch the games on television. Very easy to criticize it when most of y'all couldn't get paid to compete in anything. It's so interesting because right there at the end, she admits the fraudulentness of her argument. She's basically saying, you guys don't watch the games, you don't buy the merchandise, you don't buy the jerseys, and thus we can't pay these chicks. It's like,
by the
way, it all comes back to education.
It's 40 games and 4 months. The salary seems to be much higher at a free apartment and car.
Right, actually. Wait a minute. You know, 4 months.
I'm not weeping for the woman.
Right. Actually, so she's making what, about 80 grand in that first year? So you triple that. So that would be 240 grand a year. I would quit this job today and dress up as a woman for 240 grand.
Won't work. Well, actually, seriously, if you did that and you had the talent, I don't know how they could bar you.
Well, that's the point. I mean, that really is the point. If I just, 47, I got a little knee thing, but okay, I strap on some boobs. It's like, how are they going to stop me? I identify as a woman.
You don't even have to.
All right, that's it, Dennis. I don't know where I can get a 6'4" dress for Dennis, but we're doing it.
Say it again.
I don't know where we can find a 6'4" dress for you, but we're doing it. We're going to get you a wig and a dress, and we're going to go to the WNBA tryouts.
You know, I come on your show, I worry.
Well, speaking of worrying, at least we haven't gone down the point where we're just sort of generic MSNBC cable hosts. I think I got that segue right. That sounded kind of right to me. This Joe Scarborough guy over on MSNBC is just losing his mind. And I don't want to make this really about him, but I think it's sort of endemic of what is happening all over cable news as it relates to Trump. They told you he was Hitler. Then they promote the hell out of him because they get him, he gets them clicks and views, and then they have mental breakdowns like this.
So Donald Trump keeps talking about how America sucks. And before he got elected, America sucked. And then he got elected, suddenly America was great. Then he lost, and now America sucks again. You're voting for a guy like that? You live in the most powerful, greatest country on the face of the earth? And you're voting for a guy that tells you every day that America sucks? What's wrong with you? Who raised you? What history did you read?
That's it.
Like, where are you from? Because you may claim to be from where I'm from, but you were not raised by the same teachers I was raised by. And you don't read. Because if you read, Mike, the facts are clear. And I'm getting tired of saying this to people who claim to be patriotic but hate America, because they're always running America down. They're always trashing America. They're always saying America's horrible. Its democracy doesn't work. We need a dictatorship if Donald Trump doesn't win. I'm tired of people running America down. And on Fox News, and I'll just say it, on Fox News, they didn't want to show Donald Trump in trial. So they got three protests and said protests shut down America, basically. This weekend, there were like four migrants and a hound dog on top of a hill in New Mexico. And they had their four migrants and a hound dog cam on for hours.
Oh, Dennis, there's so many directions I want to go here. First off, the fact that he's making fun of the migrant situation or the illegal immigrant situation is insane because it's 7 million people in 3 years, not four people on a hill. That's number one. But the more interesting thing to me beyond the fake emotions and all that is that he's claiming that Donald Trump and basically the people on the right are the ones who are saying that America sucks.
Unbelievable.
But it's completely the reverse.
That's right.
On that channel will tell you it's systemically racist, all of the stuff. I mean, again, this is just kind of where we're at with things, right? He's sitting, by the way, at a panel with Al Sharpton, who every day goes on that channel and tells you how America sucks.
That's right. Who says America is systemically racist? The Trump supporters, the right wing, or they? I mean, just that alone.
The founding. Is the founding good or bad?
We weren't founded. It started in 1619. Mm. Who says that? Right? I mean, isn't that amazing? You are right. The inversion. It's like Israel is committing genocide when the entire raison d'etre of the Iranian regime and Hamas is to kill every Jew in Israel. I mean, it's the same inversion. There were five times as many Palestinians today as there were when Israel was founded. Five times as many. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty ineffective genocide. But it doesn't matter. And the same with him. So you are getting into a subject I have wondered about publicly on my show and privately much of my life. Do they believe their lies that the right hates America and the left loves it? That's what he's saying.
And what conclusion have you come to? Because I think there's probably various levels of it.
There are some that genuinely do.
Then there are some that do it for cynical purposes or for ratings, et cetera.
Right. Yes. Well, no. Yes. I don't even know how many do it for ratings. But I'll say, if you say something enough, you will start to believe it. That's one of the conclusions I have come to. See, one of the five most important memes of my life is truth is not a left-wing value. See, that's not the same as saying they're all liars. It's mm-hmm. it's to say mm-hmm. they just don't care about whether it's true. The Columbia Journalism Review, amazing. Columbia University, it's the most prestigious journalism review in the country, had this gigantic piece a couple of years ago on how much the New York Times and Washington Post lied about Trump campaign collusion with Russia. Do you think that there is one person in this country on the left who thought, wow, that's a really bad thing? I don't believe there is one, because truth is not a left-wing value. They don't go around saying, let's lie, lying is a good thing. But they don't say truth is a good thing because it isn't for them. So what you just played for your audience is a man of the left saying, we love America, you on the right hate it.
Well, I'm going to give you one more example of it, because I like that you use the word inversion there, because if you want to see an absolute inversion of everything we have seen unfold over the last 3 years, watch this.
This is a world! They give their viewers anything to try to make America look bad. They are obsessed with trashing America when America is stronger, more powerful than ever before. Its economy stronger and more powerful than ever before. So what do? They find a trans athlete in Utah
Our world's coming to an end. Help us, Jesus.
The country ain't the country I was raised in.
No, it's better. It's stronger. We're more powerful. Our military's more powerful relative to the rest of the world. Our economy is stronger relative to the rest of the world. But you would never know this because they are fed a steady stream of hate America first rhetoric, which I suppose is why you have the chairman of the House GOP saying that some of those dupes, backbenchers, are actually clinging to pro-Russian propaganda and spreading it across their districts, across America, and across the House floor.
Dennis, I sometimes admire people that do what we can do for a living, who can do something so profoundly dishonest and seem like they're doing it correctly. I could never do it. I genuinely, it's like, I wrote about it in my first book, that like the alien in the Alien movie was killing everybody. And if you remember, the doctor kind of admired the alien, not because he liked what the alien was doing, but he was like, the alien set out to do something and he's doing it. And that's that. There's value in that. And that's what I feel like these people are doing. When he says America is, first off, they're constantly telling you how bad America is, right? We already made that point. But when he tells you that America is stronger now militarily than ever before, or economically than ever before, does that sound right to you in light of recent world events?
It's another example of truth is not a left-wing value, but in his case, he is prepared to lie. Do you know how the military, for example, has, I think, not met recruiting goals at a greater pace than ever before? Mm-hmm. Does he know how woke the military has gotten with trans officers? Do you think that will bring the finest warriors, and that's what we need in our armed forces is warriors? Do you think it's going to bring the finest? What's happening is fewer and fewer are enlisting. The world is less scared of the United. The bad actors on planet Earth are less scared of the United States than at any time in my lifetime or your lifetime. Well, obviously, your lifetime. It's a shorter one. On the economy, does the debt not matter to him? Does the printing of money, like it's monopoly money, does he feel a moral obligation to, if he has children, to his children or to anybody's children, passing on this essentially unsustainable debt to them? And he's bragging about the economy? Maybe because it doesn't affect him. He makes enough money not mm-hmm. to care about what food costs. Do you know food doesn't even count when we give inflation statistics? Are you aware of that? They don't count food or gas. I have asked economists on my show, why is that? No one has an answer. It's a fraudulent statistic, the inflation rate. It doesn't count food, the single most important thing in people's budgets.
You know, I have to say, I am very, very blessed. And over the last couple of years, obviously, I've made a little money and I don't have to worry about that in the way that the average American does, let's say. But when I go to the supermarket now, I mean, you can see basic things. If you just get a pound of ground beef, it used to be about $4 and now it's about $8 or $9. Everyone sees this. Everyone sees this with eggs and milk and everything else. So it doesn't even matter. Yeah, can you spend a little more perhaps to get it if you can afford it? Sure, but they're just doing everything. And by the way, Dennis, this is the same guy who just a few weeks ago went on another one of these highly emotive diatribes telling us that Joe Biden is sharper than ever, which I suspect don't agree with.
All I think is the Groucho Marx line. The guy's in bed with another woman. His wife comes in and he goes, are you going to believe me or your lying guy?
Yeah, exactly.
It's perfect.
Dennis, my friend, do you have any wisdom for the people for the weekend before I let you go and do your own program today?
I do, actually. Thank you for asking. So, I have a theory that the world is divided among three groups: those who fight, those who do nothing, and those who help the fighters. And most good people are in the don't do anything category, because fighting is tough. And the human being, I'm one of them, by nature is lazy. I've overcome it by doing so much work, but my nature is to just play. I love playing. So everyone who is watching this and who worries about America and the West and Judeo-Christian values, the bases of Western civilization, which has been the best civilization with all its flaws, you got to do something. You've got to either fight or help the fighters, because we could lose this country. And if America is lost, cruelty will dominate the earth. I wrote that decades ago. Now you are seeing it. There is a lot of cruelty on the face of the earth. Human nature is not basically good. Don't romanticize human nature. There are good humans because they've overcome their nature. So you've got to fight, or at least help the fighters, because we could lose the greatest experiment in liberty that has ever been created.
Dennis, I will fight alongside of you as long as you're willing to fight. It is an honor being a friend and a colleague. I now leave you to the Dennis Prager Radio Show at noon Eastern from Washington, D.C. And I'll see you soon, my friend.
The honor is mine.
All right, we've got a post-game show in about 30 seconds at RubenReport.locals.com. Part two of my interview with former ESPN anchor, now independent journalist, Sage Steele, is up across platforms. Full thing's up ad-free on Locals already. We leave you, we didn't do anything COVID-related today, but we'll leave you with a little Fauci and Gates, and we'll see you on the other side. Ciao.
And within 11 months, have a vaccine.
You know, when I first saw it, I thought, that can't work.
There is so much conspiracy theory. They were absolutely correct.
We have a generation that's speaking out on this topic.
Yeah.
Not easy, but since it may be necessary to avoid climate change, we shouldn't give up. And it needs a level of cooperation.
The emergence of a new infection, a brand new disease killing almost everybody.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Be sure to subscribe and rate this podcast. And don't forget, you can watch my direct messages live on Blaze TV and YouTube every weekday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. And of course, if you want to connect with me personally and get early access to my sit-down interviews, join RubenReport.locals.com.